Good morning. It's Saturday, September 6th, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP in Burlington, Vermont. I'm Shayla Shapiro, your host for Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. Write the Book features interviews with authors, poets, illustrators, agents, and editors. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear a conversation with Rick Kasonic. Over the past 20 years, Rick Kasonic has risen to become a unique and respected voice in the fields of media and film criticism. Featuring a signature mix of insight and humor, his work appears in the country's most prominent publications and on outlets such as MediaCritic.com. A member of the prestigious Broadcast Film Critics Association, Kasonic hosted the popular entertainment feature Art Patrol on Burlington's local NBC affiliate for 25 years. Also the publisher of Burlington Magazine, Rick writes two columns for the weekly newspaper, 7 Days, hosts a long-running radio feature on film for Hall Communications, and is a frequent contributor to Film Threat. Rick is also the director of the Burlington Book Festival, which will take place next weekend from September 12th through the 14th. The Queen City's fourth annual celebration of the written word will feature readings, signings, panels, workshops, demos, musical performances, family activities, and special events. This year's festival features such literary luminaries as Mary Jo Bang, Charles Simic, Anne Hood, Jay Perini, and David Huddle. Rick Kasonic lives in Burlington with his wife and two children. When I interviewed him last week, we began by talking movies. My first question has to do with movie reviewing. What's one of the best movies of all time, in your opinion?
Well, everybody says The Godfather. I'll say The Godfather. You know, the '70s was the golden age, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe it's just because that's the age where I really fell in love with movies. That's the time period. But think about it. That's when you had all these great Scorsese, you know, movies happening. You had The Deer Hunter. You had Jaws. I mean, Jaws isn't great art, but I can't get enough of that movie. There's so much stuff from that period, but you can't beat The Godfather and the Godfather 2. It's not the most imaginative answer in the world, but when you get right down to it, those are just two of the best movies ever made.
Right. Well, sometimes reputation is based on something.
Yeah, there's a reason everybody's, you know, Godfather nuts. Yeah.
Right. Can you name a movie that you expected would be terrible but was a wonderful surprise?
You know, that really hasn't happened to me that I can recall right now. But, you know, in a similar vein, every now and then you see a movie and you give it a negative review and you think you're done with it, and you see it again years later either on video or on TV, and you think, What a dolt! what was I thinking? And the first time this happened, I think the most notable case in my career, anyway, is a movie with Jack Nicholson called Ironweed.
Oh, with Meryl Streep.
Right. I saw that and I trashed it. And now, you know, it's probably one of my 15 or 20 favorite movies. I just see more and more and more in it every time I watch it. But yeah, complete turnaround. I don't know what it is about the human mind that one person can look at a movie and think one thing one day, and a year later or whatever, think completely the opposite.
Well, now that's interesting. You did a review of E.T. when it was re-released in 2002, and you said the story itself holds up fairly well, though 20 years later does come off as thinner than I recalled. And I've had that sort of reaction to other movies that have special effects or have, particularly science fiction, I think,
because
we become so used to what's new. And so it's funny, though, it seems like it can go in either direction.
Yeah, they can have kind of a tinker toy kind of feel to them now. But at the same time, you look back on a lot of those movies, look at something like Blade Runner and how old those movies are, and even though they're not as sophisticated in their special effects as movies are now, in a way they're more admirable because look what they had to accomplish without the tools, you know, that filmmakers have today. So sometimes I really enjoy looking at old movies and just trying to figure out how they did this and how they did that. There's kind of a backlash now, I think, against digital effects. It's just getting too much of the same, you know, thing over and over again. I mean, look at a movie like The Mummy. It's so easy to make, hundreds of thousands of this monster or that monster. Or, everybody's got an army. Everybody's did the Lord of the Rings, this and that. Every movie's got this, scene where we're supposed to be amazed that there are hundreds of thousands of this or that. Well, no, why would we be amazed at this point? Right. We understand they can hit that button as many times as they want and there'll be that many monsters or whatever they are. So hopefully filmmakers will start finding more new, interesting ways to use this new technology.
Right.
Otherwise, it's going to kind of get boring for us all, I think.
Or we'll return to appreciating simplicity.
Right. You know? We might go in a whole new direction and start a whole new kind of naturalistic, old-fashioned approach to filmmaking, which might be very, very interesting.
Right. This question's a little bit of a setup, and you can feel free to disagree with me. I saw The Invasion recently, which was a remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had hoped it wouldn't let me down because I like Nicole Kidman films, but it did let me down.
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious if you find that sequels often disappoint, and if so, to what you might attribute that.
Well, yeah, and I felt the same way when I saw The Invasion. I love Nicole Kidman. You've got to be almost trying to make a bad movie, as far as I can tell. If you're going to make Nicole Kidman hard to watch, that's a feat.
Right.
They ought to have a special award for that. I guess sequels are famously kind of second rate, kind of disappointing, kind of easy to make fun of because they're so obviously 99 times out of 100, they're just a business plan. Movie A made money, so the studio head says, quick, make movie B the sequel,
right,
cash in on, the audience liking the first movie. And usually, just about everything good you could do with movie A, you did in movie A, and that's why movie A was successful. Similarly, the whole idea of remakes, you don't remake a movie unless it's a pretty significant movie. So you rarely see a remake that's better than the original.
Do you like to know about a movie before you go in order to review it? Do you like to know a little bit about it?
Just the basics. I like to be surprised like anybody else, but I like to also have the sense that when I've got to choose between 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 new movies coming to town, I want to know enough about them so that I can pick the one that's most likely going to be a good movie. Nobody wants to see a bad movie. I don't want to go out there and trash some movie. It might be fun. It is, in fact, more fun to write a negative review a lot of the time. But that's after the fact. That's after seeing a movie that's let you down, that's made some ridiculous choices that you have to mock, that just scream out to be mocked. But, I try to find a movie I'm going to like. So I just want to have a sense. Who's in it? Who's made it? What has that person made before? What's it about? And then once I've seen it, and I've written my review, I'm always really interested to jump on Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic and compare my impressions with other reviewers' impressions. That's one of the, you couldn't do that in the old days. You could maybe catch Roger Ebert on TV or something, but you couldn't just jump on the computer and have like every review that's been written of Tropic Thunder or whatever and really see where you fit in among all the reviewers in the country, particularly Roger Ebert. He's what got me interested in reviewing movies in the first place, watching him when he did his show in the old days with Gene Siskel. I just thought that'd be the greatest job in the world, wouldn't it? Just to get paid to review movies, and I was very lucky. So I felt really fortunate, and it's been fun to follow Roger Ebert all these years, and lately through a lot of, these crises that he's had with his health, and it's nice to keep seeing him bounce back. And he's off the air now. They actually gave him the boot a few weeks ago so that they could hire some, younger whippersnapper reviewers. There's this sad trend, across the country. But, he still obviously writes for his newspaper. And he has his website. And, so there'll always be a way to read what Roger's thinking. He's one of the great modern movie minds.
Yeah.
Brilliant guy.
You mentioned a minute ago that when you're choosing which movie to see, you'll look into a few details about each movie that's out there. Is it always your choice which movies you're going to review?
So far, yeah.
So Seven Days doesn't ask you, could you please review this movie?
No. There are two reviewers, Margot and I, we'll email back and forth, talk about who's interested in what. For many years, I was the only reviewer at 7 Days, so there wasn't even a question. You know, they've been wonderful, I should say, to work for. Pamela and Paula, I used to work with at the Vanguard Press, and they've done an amazing thing with the paper they've created. They're wonderful to work with. It's just like, here you've got this space, see whatever you want to see, pretty much, you know, within reason, however many words you want to write, whatever you want to say. They're, you know, wonderful people, great to work for. And now that there are two of us doing reviews there, we'll just sort of check out what each other's fondest desire is and try to accommodate each other. But it just about always works out that we both see something we're enthused about.
Yeah. What does somebody do to start to become a movie reviewer? I mean, other than going to the movies and writing down what you think.
I get asked that a real lot, and I get emailed that question a lot, and students come up all the time and want to know. So I tell people, if you love movies, see movies. You see movies for years and years and years and years and years before you even try to do anything, because you've got to have this automatic institutional memory kind of thing. You just have to have a bank of knowledge about movies to base your impressions on, to have a frame of to give your frame of reference when you're talking about movies. You can't be 18 years old and go see your first Martin Scorsese movie and come out and say, well, this guy makes movies about the Rolling Stones and he's a great director. I really like Give Me Shelter. You know, I mean, that's not what Martin Scorsese's about. You've got to have seen Martin Scorsese's movies going all the way back to the 70s. You have to know that he made The Last Waltz. This wasn't the first time he made a movie that had to do with music, that he's worked, you know, on things for PBS, you know, about Bob Dylan. You just have to, without doing a lot of research, cracking a lot of books, you have to just automatically know a lot of things before you even see the movie, so that when you do see the movie, all these things are sort of flying around in your head and adding up to something by the time you leave the theater. You've decided pretty much that compared to this and this and this that director's done, this movie falls here. Compared to that and that and that that the actors, that the leads, you know, have acted in, you know, their performances kind of rank here. And then, once you've got that, and you've got something to say, you've got to find a place to say it, and that's, of course, the tricky part, because newspapers and radio stations and TV stations, you know, aren't out there advertising for movie critics. So, you know, I'd recommend starting with a local paper, a weekly or a monthly local paper, and I'd write and write and write and write and submit again and again and again and again. You know, I recommend trying to be not so serious all the time. Try to be entertaining. Give them a reason why it's fun to read what you think. Make them laugh a little bit. Maybe tell them something they didn't know about the director or about the movie or about who wrote the movie. Something about the background of it. Just try to make it entertaining as well as informative. And if you're lucky, eventually somebody at some weekly is going to say, you know what? We've got space to fill. If you're willing to do it for a certain price, sure, we'll include you every week or every month or whatever, and then you've got your foot in the door. And whatever you do, you know, just don't stop. Try to expand. Once you can say, look, I'm the film critic for this newspaper or this magazine, you can go to a radio station and say, look, I've got my column over here. I'd love to do a thing on the air with you. You may not be able to find a radio station that's going to pay you, so maybe they'll say, look, if you can find your own sponsor, we'll let you on the air. You know, and you go around and you find a business that'll give you such and such an amount of money if the station will run their commercial. And the next thing you know, you've got yourself a sponsor and you're on the radio every week. And the same thing with TV. If you're being published in this local paper, if you're on that local station, if you're legitimate at that point in their eyes, well, God bless you, good luck. You may find a TV station that is interested in having a young reviewer on air, maybe once a week as part of the newscast. It's happening less and less and less, so it's a tougher and tougher battle, but anything's possible.
The trend you're talking about reminds me of a movie, and that movie is Broadcast News.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the trend of, and that actually is years ago already, but it really did herald a new era.
Very prescient, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of the whole, you know, I hate to use the phrase dumbing down, but it's kind of the William Hurt character there kind of sums up what's happened over the last
Absolutely.
20 years or so since that movie. It's kind of all about the good-looking Mariner woman anchor and the fluffy entertainment news and the same story about Lindsay Lohan over and over and over and over again until you want to bang your head against the wall. Less and less real news, less and less about real, about culture. Yeah, that movie really had a lot to say way before everybody else was talking about the downhill slide. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the Burlington Book Festival, which is coming up. I mean, when this show broadcasts, it'll be a week away. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the history of the festival as director.
Yep, I'm very, very happy to. It was founded in 2005, which seems amazing to me. You know, we're about to put on our fourth annual literary shindig here. It's just been a blur. It's a wonderful experience to be able to put something like this on, and you know, not to sound grandiose, but it's wonderful to be able to give something like this to the community. I've lived here since 1981, and you know, I've been very tied in through publishing Burlington Magazine. I've been very tied into downtown and the cultural scene, the art scene, the festival scene. And it's wonderful now to have become kind of a part of that. Mm-hmm. It's something that's grown every year. I mean, I can't say enough about the community, about the public. It's just such an impressive thing to see in a community this size, the number of people that turn out. We've had great weather every year, and thousands of people are, you know, choose to come inside a room, and on this beautiful summer day when the water's out there and the sun's out there, listen to people read from their books, read their poems, read their children's stories, read whatever. This is a very, very, very book-loving, literate community, and they've embraced this event way beyond my wildest expectations. And Joyce Carol Oates herself last year just looked out at this crowd, this overflowing crowd at the Film House at Main Street Landing's Performing Arts Center. You know, the room seats 240, and they were literally hanging off the rafters, and she looks out and she just says, this is an amazingly literate community, because she had just kind of kiddingly asked a couple of questions before she started to read something. She said, you know what this name refers to? Can you guess what this title refers to? And people in the audience were shouting out these kind of esoteric answers. They really knew their stuff, and she was impressed.
Yeah.
We've stayed in touch since then by email, and she just thought Burlington was a remarkable town, and she's been to a lot of towns.
Yeah, well, that brings me to another subject, which is she's a big name.
Yeah, and, you don't get a lot bigger.
And this year you're going to have Charles Simic at the festival. He's the 15th Poet Laureate of the United States. How difficult is it to get some of these guests to come?
Well, that's an interesting question. Luckily, I have a year to put this lineup together. Every year it's a little different. There are between 50 and 75 participants, sometimes more. We may actually have more than that this year who take part in the course of the 3 days. But you've got, you know, 10 or 15 people you'd consider headliners that are really going to be the big draws and that kind of give the event the stature that it has. And, you know, one year it was Robert Bly. He's about as big as you get in the poetry biz. And last year we had a number of great people, and including Joyce.
Russell Banks once too.
Russell Banks we've had twice now. He's one of those people that just kind of classes up an event, you know, by walking through. And you know, you can sort of call on him every two or three years, and he's happy to, you know, drive himself over. You don't have to send a limo or anything. He'll, you know. You get a hotel room is pretty much all it takes, you know, to get a lot of people here, because they love the event, they love the town, they want to support it, they appreciate people appreciating what they do. So it's nice to have a year, because it isn't easy to get, you know, all the people that you'd like to get, but it's surprising how many people you don't think you might be able to get that you can get when you say Burlington, Vermont. You know, I can't promise you nice weather, but it'll be mid-September, you know, in Burlington, Vermont. And a lot of people will travel an awful long distance to just come and be part of a literary festival under those conditions, where they, you know, they otherwise charge $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000. I've seen some amazing examples of generosity. There's something magical about Burlington, and this event has been getting a very nice reputation among the nation's top authors, so that now I can get in touch with somebody about next year, you know, like a John Irving or Richard Russo or somebody like that, and they know about the event and they're willing to talk about it in advance, you know, based on their knowledge of the event, because other writers who have been here since 2005 have bumped into them and told them about it. We've had good weather, we've had great writers,
yeah.
We've had wonderful, appreciative audiences,
yeah.
And I don't want to jinx it, you know, with any luck, in a few days, you know, that's the scenario that'll play out again.
Now, I noticed on the list of authors, there's a very large local presence as far as Vermont authors being involved. And Vermont has so many authors that's a wonderful resource. Do you try to keep it fairly local to some extent?
Yeah, we are very deliberate about the mix, you know, keeping it a combination of Vermonters and people from outside the state. The mix in terms of literary genres, you know, it can't be all children's books, it can't be all poetry, it can't be all literary fiction, you know, but it can be a wonderful mix of everything with the humor of the Onion, you know, thrown in. I mean, I think we've really got just about every bait. We've got, you know, scientific writing from Dorian Sagan, the son of Carl Sagan, this year. I think we've got just about every kind of writing. We try to make it a mix of Vermont writers who are great. They're wonderfully supportive. Vermont's got a, you know, per capita, a ridiculous number of amazingly talented writers. Jay Perini, you know, is coming up this year. You don't do much better than him, and he's been a great friend of the event. Julia Alvarez has been here. Every year we dedicate the festival to a Vermont writer who's made a significant contribution to the literary arts one way or the other. It was Jim Jeffords one year. You know, he wasn't writing, but he was supporting a mentoring program. Uh-huh. Last year was Howard Mosher, and this year it's David Huddle, UVM professor who's got, I think it's his sixth volume of poetry just came out this summer.
He was my first guest on the show.
Oh, was he? Yeah, he's a really, really great guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's great. So how is the Onion involved? I saw them listed as a participant. So what is the Onion?
They're involved very, very fortunately for me. One of the things that I pride myself on about this festival is that virtually everything is free. You know, that isn't true of most festivals downtown, as you know. Everything that happens for 3 days is open to the public and free. You walk in, and Alistair MacLeod is going to be sitting there in a chair in front of you reading some of the greatest literature written in the last 100 years.
So nothing needs to be reserved ahead?
No, it's all free. It's all general seating, survival of the fittest, you know, good luck. Get there early. You know, we're going to have Gregory Maguire this year. You know, is there a better best-selling author, you know, in America right now than Gregory Maguire? You know, he wrote Wicked, and he's got the Broadway hit play. You know, he's got a new book coming out, and he's going to be reading from this book that's not even published yet. Yeah. So, you know, what a treat that's going to be. The only event that you have to buy a ticket to is the Saturday night show put on by members of the Onion. Okay. And that's because it's a benefit for the festival that they do every year. And, you know, why they do it, I can't even tell you. You know, they live and work in New York City. They're busy. They're famous. They're best-selling, New York Times best-selling authors. They're busy cranking out these new books all the time that are the funniest things in the world.
Hilarious.
You know, and, you know, I'm not being disingenuous when I say these are the funniest people I know of. We just got in touch with them, just casually. Just when you're planning, you know, you're trying to put the festival together a year ahead of time, or 8 months, 6 months ahead of time, you contact an amazing number of people, and you hear back, unfortunately, I can't make it for this or that reason, but good luck with your event. I hope you do all right. That's what you hear from most people. And I was shocked back in 2004 to get a reply from The Onion saying, Burlington, Vermont, do you have, like, any place where you can ride go-karts up there? excuse me? And yeah, this group of people just came up from the Onion. They rode go-karts. They went out, you know, they just thought it was a blast to be by the water, to be out in nature, to be in a place as beautiful, you know, as Burlington. Take a little, you know, break from New York City for a few days and just come out here and have fun. And for an hour or two on Saturday night, just do what they do. It's an incredible multimedia presentation. They bring their laptop and they're throwing funny stuff up on the screen and wisecracking, and it's just amazing. I dubbed it the State of the Onion address, and you know, just sort of pretended that they were going to just keep coming every year and doing it again and again. And you know, so, I don't know if they think that somebody signed a contract somewhere obligating them, and that's why they keep coming. But I keep inviting them, and they keep saying yes, and I couldn't be happier. You know.
So that's the Saturday night, the 13th.
Right.
What time is that event?
7 o'clock.
Okay. And how do people get tickets to that?
Advance tickets are available at City Market.
Okay.
That's pretty much. They'll be, if there are any left, okay. They go really fast. Theoretically, they're available the day of the show at the Burlington Book Festival booth, but you know, last year we had 5 or 10 on the day of the show, and I really would be surprised this year if we have any on Saturday. So,
Jim Ellefson is leading a literary musical fusion event at Halverson's on Friday night.
Oh, jazz. Yeah.
Has that been held in previous years?
That's a Friday night tradition, yeah.
And what is that like?
It gets bigger and bigger every year. It's really a lot of fun. You know, they're a combination of local, you know, local poets, local musicians. People are playing great jazz music and reading their poetry to it, and it's all different kinds of poetry. Some of it's kind of slammy, some of it's, you know, just out way out there.
Is this completely impromptu, or they practice and rehearse and figure out what they're doing ahead of time?
It's pretty much impromptu. I mean, you can walk in off the street and just you know, work your way into it. It's kind of like it's organic. It's just there, and you can, it'll absorb you if you get close enough to it. You know, and yeah, it's a Friday night tradition. Halverson's has hosted it every Friday night since the festival began.
Oh, that's great.
We have a sort of a relatively staid, you know, series of opening night ceremonies at the Main Street Landing Performing Arts Center. And several other things happening, you know, we're showing a documentary called Reading Alistair MacLeod at Fletcher Free Library at different times throughout the day on Friday as well. And there are things happening at City Market and all kinds of other stuff. But like that's the event at Halverson's that really carries the festival opening night into the night,
right.
You know, and is just really, you know, a rockin' wild time.
Okay. I have one last question for you. It's a writing question. And it's the same question I ask all of my guests at the end of the show.
Oh, you've got one of those.
I have one of those. As a writer, okay, so you put your writing hat back on.
Yep.
Do you ever get stuck when you're trying to write a review or an article that you're working on? And if so, what do you do?
That's a serious question because, you know, we're talking about the mysteries of the human mind here. I mean, we don't know who's writing these things we write, you know. They're just, we've got a hand, we put a pen in it, we're just doing what we're told. You know, it's a very mysterious process. And, yeah, every now and then I'll find that I feel like I know what I want to say, and, of course, I've just written 2 pages, and everything I felt I wanted to say just came out. And then all of a sudden there's this thing I want to say, and I realize I don't know the words for it. You know, and sometimes it's a case of just not being able to remember a word, or there's a phrase I want, but I can feel the phrase, but it just really hasn't formed yet so that I can see it and hear it and write it down. And, you know, so what I'll normally do is just, you know, sit there. I write everything I write longhand, you know, on a pad from Staples. And, you know, I'll sit there and I'll look up from the pad and pay attention to something else and just hope. Because so much of this process is just automatic, it's, you know, unconscious, it's happening whether you're thinking about whether it's happening or not. So I'll talk to whoever's in the room, I'll watch a movie that's on, and then I'll go back to the back of my brain and see, have you figured this out yet?
Has it shown up?
And sometimes, yeah, it's arrived. And other times, it might not show up until later that night. One of these days, you know, maybe when I'm 90 or whatever, something I'm waiting for won't show up. But fortunately, I'm happy to say, so far everything's arrived, even if it's arrived late. Sometimes I'll just end up leaving a blank on the page and say, okay, when I wake up tomorrow morning, it'll be there. And thankfully, so far, it hasn't taken any longer than that. But it's a mysterious thing.
Ellen Goodman once had a column where she talked about the things that she, you know, she could remember songs from camp when she was 12, but all of a sudden she's having trouble remembering things she heard on the news that she's supposed to write about today.
Oh, yeah, so. Happens all the time. You know what the worst thing is? Everywhere I go, people come up to me and say, what's good at the movies right now? What did you just see? And this has been going on for almost 30 years. Just about every time that happens, I can't remember what I just saw at the movies. And I'm not kidding. That can be the day I went to the movies. What is it about that? You know, I mean, I can give you, you know, detailed impressions of movies I saw when I was 14 years old. And I go see a movie, somebody walks up, what did you just see? Blank.
Yeah, you need to keep an index card in your back pocket or something.
Yeah, yeah. Or my ticket stub. I should just clip it to my shirt and just, you know, have it there to look down like a name tag or something. It's the weirdest thing, but that's the mystery of the human mind.
Well, listen, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks for inviting me.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Rick Kasonic. Next week, tune in at the same time to hear an interview with author, activist, and winner of the Mary McCarthy Prize, Diane Leffer. In lieu of the Bookworm's calendar this week, I'll pass along the website for the Burlington Book Festival, www.burlingtonbookfestival.com. From the site, you can find the full schedule of events. If you're interested in sharing Write the Book with out-of-town friends, let them know they can stream it live every Saturday morning at www.theradiator.org. Archived episodes of Write the Book are also available on iTunes as free podcasts. If you have comments about the show or events for next week's Bookworms calendar, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. This has been Write the Book. I'm Shayla Shapiro, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP in Burlington, Vermont.